Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Marnie Svedberg, and I welcome you to Marnie and Friends, a place where leaders share practical, helpful, and encouraging ways to get anything important done faster, better, and smarter. Right now, I encourage you to sit back, buckle up, and join us for fun, laughter, practical help, and clear thinking, the kind of discussion that focuses our attention off of the fluff and onto the most important stuff in life. Again, welcome to Marnie's Friends. Let's get going. Hey there, welcome back to another edition of Marnie's Friends. This is Marnie Svedberg, and we're so excited to have you along this afternoon. We are going to be talking about Generation Me and how they are affecting you and what you can do about it and who is Generation Me and all that. And during this hour, you are going to learn how the Generation X and Yers view authority, what's the best way to establish trust and respect with them. You're going to learn what they value most from a company or an organization. A lot of you are hiring these kids. You're trying to recruit them as volunteers. You're going to learn how you can understand where they're coming from and maybe what they're looking for in a career or as a volunteer. Also, why they seem to be so self-assured, yet they really resist constructive feedback, and how you can communicate them with them more effectively. Our guest today, Peggy Harper Lee, is the author of a book called Spoiled: Fresh Ideas for Parenting Your Entitled Child at Any Age. And also, she is the mother of four, ages 4 to 29, and she's a 30-year career in the financial services industry. She has experience in the boardroom, the corner office, working with individual clients, and at home helping others to understand the keys to success that start with personal leadership. She inspires audiences to recognize the entitlement mindset that's going on out there, then also when that spoiled mindset serves us and how to use it to be truly happy, healthy, wealthy, and wise. Welcome to you, Peggy. So excited to have you here today.
Thank you, Marnie. It's great to be here. I'm great to talk with you.
Well, I actually came upon this topic when I was asked to speak on it, and I said, I can't, because I really don't understand it myself. So when I found you, and unfortunately the speaking engagement had already been filled, or I would have recommended you, but when I found you as an expert in this area, I was so excited, because I know that, you know, when we have a restaurant and we have a retail store, and I work with outsourcers and I work with a lot of kids, and it's like, I really need to know what they're thinking and how come they're responding the way they are. And then in addition to that, working with volunteers at either in your church or your nonprofit organizations, these kids make up a huge part of the volunteer organization in our country. I mean, they are really passionate about what they're passionate about. And so bringing you on today is very much of a self-serving thing, as well as I just know everybody that's listening, I know you're going to love this too. So Peggy, maybe let's start with just very briefly, how did you come to learn that there was a different mindset going on with Generation X and Yers than with the rest of us?
Yeah, well, kind of like the rest of us do. I mean, I'm imagining there's some people out there nodding their heads. So whether it's the two-year-old running around terrorizing the library or at the restaurant, or the people that you're working with, if you feel like you're babysitting instead of managing, whether it's a volunteer organization or a place of business, there is just this generation of people that now make up 60% of the workforce, believe it or not, the Gen Me, which is Gen X and Gen Y, that have grown up with some really specific messages, and it's impacted them and how they view the world. And we've been using our same leadership styles and our own expectations and how we think things work to work with them, and it's not working. And so we've got some chaos going on. So I really started to look into the entitlement issue in general, how parents have played a huge role in that. And that's why my first book is aimed at parents. My next book, which is not out yet, is called Spoiled at Work. So that's going to take a deeper dive into this issue at work and in organizations. But the incidence is showing up in greater frequency. And so giving people the tools and the information they need to calm everything down and get back on the right track became a huge passion of mine.
Can you define for us what you mean when you say entitlement? I mean, we all have our own definitions, but what are you meaning by it?
Yeah, and there are a lot of definitions out there, and some people use entitlement and spoiled interchangeably, and some will argue that it's not interchangeable, and I'm not going to go into that dry discussion. But the bottom line is we're looking at people who have either been – most people readily recognize entitlement as a result of overindulgence. So the kid that got the car for their 16th birthday, it's not only a car, it's a Mercedes, or they got $1,000 allowance and then extra money if that didn't turn out to be enough. We can pretty easily recognize those kids as having a spoiled or an entitled mentality. And what it is the exact opposite of personal responsibility. So if you think that you can open your mouth and a worm drops in it, then you have no ownership, or you don't care that there's not a worm readily available. You know, there's this mentality that goes along with that. But what a lot of people don't recognize is entitlement is also born out of helicopter parenting, so overprotection, as well as, believe it or not, neglect. So that can either be free-range parenting, that can be a two-parent household where the nanny's in charge, or that can be a low-income situation with a single mom who's got 8 kids and one of them has special needs. So the reason it's born out of all 3 of those situations, some people say, well, wait a second, that doesn't even compute, is because what it's about is about the change of the transfer of power from where it rightfully belongs with the parent to the child. And so they grow up with this sense of, I deserve this. I don't want anybody meddling with me. I don't need any authority. I know all the answers. I can Google it. I got an A for effort and a trophy for showing up, and the world does revolve around me on Facebook and iPhone and me. So it's really shaped the way they've grown up, and it's not just the parents. Of course, there's some societal influences in there, but that's what we're working with.
You know, I love your line. And by the way, you guys, if you haven't already done so over at marniesfriends.com, you can get the download of a free report that Peggy has put together for you on this topic. And I was going through that, and I loved the phrase that this generation gets an A for effort and a trophy just for showing up. And I love that, because that's really a huge difference from how growing up was for me, really. You know, you did not get an A for effort. They failed you if you didn't do the work.
They did, and if they failed you, your parents didn't call to argue your case for you.
Right. No. They backed up the teachers, absolutely. Yeah, big difference. Well, let's go then right directly in to how they view authority, because now you've already talked a little bit about it, that they really don't view authority as authority at all.
Right. Well, everything's become relative. We haven't instilled in them to the extent we have in the past a sense of value, a sense of right and wrong. So with that being the case, there's a lot of relativism. I can't even spit out the word going on. So if there's a chance that you're wrong and somebody else is right, they just do not have that respect for wisdom and earned title positional authority that we did in past generations. It's more of a show me authority, or, you know, you'll get my respect once I've hung around you for a while, because they really do believe they can Google it and get the answer themselves. So there's really not that view of authority as being something that automatically garners respect. It's not that they won't ever. It's just that, you know, I would never dream of saying things to my boss or the volunteer coordinator at my church that comes out of the mouths of people who just have this different view. So it takes building that personal relationship with them and gathering authentic authority, respect for authority with them, because you're not going to walk in and say, I'm the king, I'm the queen, I'm the boss, whatever, and automatically have that authority. And this relativism plays into it, too. If everybody is right or nobody's hurting, it's all okay unless somebody's hurting somebody, then they really see the world as very forgiving. And if what they're doing isn't hurting you, then you should be just completely, perfectly fine with that. And that doesn't work so well in a more structured environment. And that's not where they thrive, at least not initially.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, and you know, when you were going through the list of who's included in this, it is just about everybody, because if you got the side with the overindulgent parents, then you got the side with the parents who are the helicopter parents. That only leaves the people who are walking really down the straight and narrow in the middle that are balancing this thing perfectly. So, you know, you've really got most of the people in the world now who are not looking at things like a former generation did.
Well, I think part of the problem, Marty, and academics will argue about this, and again, my goal wasn't to figure out the absolute truth. It was to help people with the common sense truth. Mm-hmm. But we went in the early 70s through, we had just finished Free Love, Women's Lib, Dr. Sears or Dr. Spock. I always get this confused. I should cement this in my brain. But we came up with child-centered parenting in the early 70s with the help of a doctor, which says, let's all work together to decide what the rules are, and let's make sure the child's happy at all costs. And that really took the pendulum from children are seen and not heard, which wasn't healthy, all the way to the complete other side, which is literally placing the crown of entitlement on their head at birth, and we missed all the middle ground. So that's not to say there aren't some parents that are camping out there, but we did in this effort to make sure our children have things better than we did, and I mean, who doesn't love their children and want them to have a happy childhood? I mean, that's not bad.
Right.
Of course not, but we've just gone too far in the opposite direction.
And now they're grown up. Okay, this is Marnie. We're talking today with Peggy Harper Lee of PeggyHarperLee.com. We're going to take a break and come right back and talk about how we can establish trust and respect with these kids, and also what they really do value so that we can tap into that. We'll be right back.
The fastest and easiest way to find out which major women's events are coming to your area is to visit www.womensevents.info. That's womensevents.info. It's the only directory of its kind, and it features all of the major events like Women of Faith, Beth Moore, eConference Women, and so many others. It's free to search, and you can find it all at womensevents.info.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back. This is Marnie, and we're visiting today with Peggy Harper Lee, the author of Spoiled, Fresh Ideas for Parenting Your Entitled Child at Any Age. And we are talking about how Generation Me is affecting us as employers, as volunteer leaders, even just in our everyday lives, even dealing with our own children. We need to understand how they're thinking. We had such a great talk right before the break, and we're going to go on right now and talk a little bit about how we do establish trust and rapport, because Peggy was just mentioning before the break that these kids don't come in and just automatically give you respect because of your position. That's no longer norm. Now you got to earn it somehow. You got to tap into what they value. And Peggy, that's a huge difference. That one alone is just kind of mind-bending. Okay, so as a boss, I hold the checkbook. I mean, I make up the schedule. How can they not automatically respect that?
Right. Well, and I'll answer that. But before I get to that, how many employers have been handed a schedule from a Gen Me and said, "Here, work around this." I mean, yes, the boss does have the checkbook and does have the schedule, but those limits are even being tested. So. Part of it is that there's just they have really high expectations for themselves personally, from the people that they interact with, and they do not have team loyalty, even if they've been with a company for a number of years, which really isn't happening a lot anymore.
Right,
but
right.
So their approach is, give me what I want or I'll move on, and they are in incredible numbers. The average time on the job right now is at about 18 months,
wow,
which is significantly down from past generations, and arguably not serving them or our businesses that well. So, you know, it's they're not going to respect you because you have the checkbook and set the schedule. So the number one thing they value and the most important thing to keep in mind is they value feeling valued. They want to feel important, and that can take on a lot of different things. And some employers that I've worked with have told me, you know what, I'm exhausted from complimenting them all the time. It just takes so much work. And I'm not even necessarily saying that needs to happen. But to make them feel valued, you've got to hit them in their sweet spots. So recognition is important. I won't say that it's not. You don't have to high-five them every 2 seconds and throw them on the employee newsletter every week, but they really do need that validation. They need to know. But some of being valued will just mean you hear what they're saying and you take it into account when you're making a decision. Now, that happens a lot anyway. So as you can see, there can be some organic ways to make them feel valued that aren't going to drain you while you're trying to pump them up. It can't be an artificial thing or they'll smell that out, just like a two-year-old will smell a rat, right? So getting opportunities to solicit their feedback, implement their ideas, letting them know their accomplishments and contributions are important. Those are the key ways to let volunteers or employees know that they're valued, and that will help with the authority issue as well, because then they'll begin, as they feel respected and valued, they'll begin to return that.
So, I mean, I think that's what we've always been trying to do as bosses, as volunteer leaders, is to really recognize people and validate them. Is there a certain way that this younger generation is looking for that maybe does not come so naturally to us?
Well, one of the things that really, really appeals to them that may not be intuitive for most of us is that they love to have fun. So when we're all serious and in our business mode and in our volunteer mode and we're working to get a task done, we might like, yeah, we'll have fun and we'll play later. But just bringing that into the workforce, and I don't mean goof off and all the things that fun can mean to some people. I mean just crack some humor, crack a smile. You know, that alone is going to make them feel valued and really help them to bring out their creativity. Think of rewards that are entertaining. So in the past, I've been handed more Starbucks gift cards than I can shake a stick at. That's not going to mean a thing to this generation. They have big, lofty goals. $5 gift card, they'll probably lose.
Right,
they'll
right, probably right,
end up
right.
somewhere in their car or in the bus.
Not memorable.
Right. So coming up with things, either activities or the ways you're organizing your teams or how you're divvying up responsibilities or, concocting, that's probably a bad word, or not a really accurate word, but, you know, hey, we're going to do this project, and I know it's not incredibly interesting, so we're going to do it based on this theme, and so each day we're going to dress up. I mean, I don't know. I've just seen some amazing creativity that we've come up with when we listen to them. Number one is ask them, what do you want? What's fun for you? What would you find interesting here at work? We've come up with some really out-of-the-box ways to get them interested, engaged, and feel valued.
I can already hear, I can already hear as I'm listening to you, the anxiety level rising among our listeners as they're like, oh no, I have to run a daycare. I have to think of how to keep these people happy every minute of every day or they'll leave me or have a fit. You know, what do you say to the boss who's like, I'm barely staying alive here. I don't have time to plan a party for my staff every, week or month or whatever. What do you say to the overwhelmed employer already?
Again, they'll want to do it. You don't have to do it.
Oh,
I mean,
nice.
Yeah, this doesn't mean you're doing everything. And you're right. Sometimes it does feel like adult daycare, and you definitely want to move out of that, because if you're supervising, you're not managing, and I think most of us as business owners know that. We want to create an environment where they self-manage, and we don't need to get down to that level.
Right.
But bring them in, co-opt them. This group of workers, although they do feel more entitled, they're more tolerant. They have high self-esteem. They're pretty aggressive in terms of, hey, let's get this job done, let's get this goal done. They don't shy away from things. So capitalize on their positives and bring them in as part of the solution. So if one of the suggestions is we want to create a theme, or we want to party on the last Friday of the month, great. Who's going to do that? Awesome. Who's going to be on your team? Fabulous. And away you go.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, I love that idea right off, because again, it's more buy-in. It's even though they don't have the same level of loyalty, what you find among people of all times is that they are going to be self-serving at the bottom of it all. And if it's a wonderful place to work and they enjoy going to work every day, it's going to be pretty tough to get them to change.
Absolutely, and you know, there's some firms in the Bay Area, particularly the high tech firms, that have really made a science out of this, and I'm not suggesting every business owner has to do that, but some of them serve food free all day long, because they know their gaming employees are coming in at all hours of the day and night, and might not even stop to shower, and the expense of feeding them is definitely worth all of that creativity and energy. So just looking at your workplace, your workforce, what needs to be done, and then figuring out how to support them and how to give that message that you value them. And sometimes we can look at it as a hard expense, like feeding them, but if you're feeding them and it saves, if you're feeding 100 and it saves you from hiring 200 more to get the work done, you're ahead.
Right.
And the cost to recruit and train is really high. So even if you're not getting that kind of return on investment, maybe at least you're saving all the expense of recruiting the next Gen X or Gen Y. If you didn't solve the problem the first time, you might just be recycling through that, right? So.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Well, and the high expense of training is just by itself just outrageous. So this is Marnie. We are talking today with Peggy Harper Lee of PeggyHarperLee.com, author of Spoiled, Fresh Ideas for Parenting Your Entitled Child at Any Age. And she's talking with us about how we can maximize our relationships with Generation Me. We're going to come right back and talk a little bit about setting boundaries. How in the world do we set boundaries with this generation? We'll be right back. Are you registered to receive the Marnie Minute? Have you sometimes missed out on training or connection opportunities because you didn't know about them in advance? Visit Marnie.com and select free updates to receive email notifications so you will never miss a beat. That's free updates over at Marnie.com. Oh, you guys, the new Marnie.com is coming our way pretty soon. I'm so excited, and it's going to be so much easier for you to find your way around. And I just love it that a lot of you that are listening today are listening to the archive, because they are in Marnie.com and the mentorship's down there. And for those of you who are listening live with us, congratulations to you. And this is such a fun program that we're having with Peggy today on a topic that we all need to understand, whether we are hiring Generation Me people, parenting them, working with them in a volunteer organization, or working beside them somewhere. Even as yourself, it might be interesting to hear how you're thinking and what's going on in your head and how we're perceiving that as different generations from you. We're going to talk right now about setting boundaries a little bit. Before the break, we were talking about what Generation Me really values and how to gain respect with them. And we were talking about the possibility of building fun into their lives, even at work or with the volunteer team, and allowing them to plan something. But Peggy, the first question, of course, that comes to my mind as a leader is, how much rope can I give them, and how little can I give them to work with and have it be okay? Where's the balance? What kind of boundaries can I set without offending them, really? And do they tolerate any at all?
Yeah, amazingly they do. Some of them have not had a lot in their lives and have been felt wanting for that. I mean, what we know about children who have no boundaries, they're the most out of control. Mm-hmm. Because what that boundary does is it gives them an endpoint, and so they don't have to keep running and running and running to find where it is.
Oh, yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does.
So,
so
in the parenting world, and I'm going to switch quickly back into the work world, but this is an analogy most people will probably relate to, and it's chapter, one of the people's favorite chapters in my book. It's chapter 14. It's called Be the Rock. So when working with families or employers, there's this high level of frustration. Why won't they just do this? Why do they keep doing this? Why won't they respect the boundaries? Why do I have to, you know, like that sort of language is happening. And what I do is help parents and managers to adjust that back to, I'm the role model. I'm the stationary one. It's my child's responsibility to test those limits and to take out that rope and see how far they can run. And so it's in my being always there, always consistent. They know where to come back to. And when I've set those appropriate limits, they stop pushing so hard. They stop looking for it because it's there. So these kids, whether they've received that as children or not, and if they're entitled, it's probably been a bit iffy, or at least not consistently. What we know about children is they need that. So they may be acting out, but when you start to instill those, it's unusual for in an employer relationship. I mean, you'll always have the one-ups, but it's unusual that they don't go, hey, that actually feels good. So if it's done in a way that's respectful and values them, so I don't care what you think, you're going to be here at 8 o'clock in the morning no matter what. That's not going to work so well with them. And it's not terribly respectful anyway, although it may be the honest truth. But look, we've got customers that show up at 8, and I know how much you want to support the business and be here and enjoy the growth that we're going to have. You got to be here at 8. So, you know, just change the languaging so that they understand the boundaries. The thing about this group of people is that they're in their heads a lot. They're very emotional. And not as emotionally developed. So helping them to get out of their heads and talk is really important in that boundary setting, because they may have an emotional reaction to a boundary. I'm not doing that. And a simple question of, tell me about that. Tell me what you're thinking about that. We'll really get down to something that's easily resolved. So those are some tips. Having frequent communication, letting them know what's expected is important, and having a really good conflict resolution policy or code of conduct or code of champions is really important, because you just want to bring that whole tension level down and establish that kind of rock position. Picture of the biggest boulder you can think of, and that's you.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. You know, I love the analogy of the parenting, because it is just so true. And all of us really, you know, they've done these tests where they put people on a treadmill and they say, now we just want you to run until you can't run anymore. And they'll put somebody else on a treadmill and they say, we want you to run for 45 minutes. We're going to run you for 45 minutes. And it's amazing that, you know, neither of them have a clock in the room, but one of them knows when 45 minutes is over and the other one doesn't. And, you know, it's amazing the difference in how they run, because the person that doesn't have any end in sight just loses heart almost immediately. As soon as they begin to feel tired, they can hardly get their legs to keep going. And the other person, even though 45 is a huge, huge amount for them, they can do it because they know that there's an end out there. And I think that works in every area when we think about the boundaries. I love how you said it provides an end point, a rock, a place. This is how far you can go and no farther.
And I'm the rock, and I'll be here when you, and you can come back.
And I'll be consistent. The other thing you said that was so helpful is to just, in your own mind as the supervising person, to just welcome the reality that, of course, they have to test the limit.
It does shift your thinking. It takes you from being frustrated to go, okay, mm-hmm. yeah, that's their job. Well,
right.
here's mine, and I can do this. And it just, it takes it out of that drama, emotional to, oh, yep, there it is. Okay, well, I can handle this, and getting on to the next thing without the tension, the conflict.
One of the things that I've been saying recently in interviews with potential employees that's been getting a new response, and probably just in the last 2 years I've noticed this response change. In the past, I would describe our retail store as an enjoyable place to work. We're very much of a team. Go on a little bit about that, and then if I would say something about we don't have a lot of drama going on here, you know, people would just look at me. In the past year or two, when I say we don't have a lot of drama here, people's entire body language changes. They slump the shoulders back, sit back in their chair, and like breathe a sigh of relief as if it's the most blessed thing I could say to them, that when they come to work, there's not going to be a lot of drama. What do you think is going on with that?
Yeah, well, they've been a lot in their heads. Like I was saying before, they haven't developed as much emotionally because they haven't been pressure tested. You know, those helicopter parents swooped in to save them when they were frustrated or angry and had to battle with their teachers so that they didn't have to experience the defeat of a B versus an A.
Right.
And they just really haven't honed some of those skills that we got by being battered around a little bit as kids, not physically, of course, but just the,
right.
the process of growing up. They've missed a lot of that. So a lot of what's going on in their heads is over they can't cope. They really can't, or they don't know how to process. And so what's going on in their heads is very, very what if and overgeneralizing and over-dramatizing. So you saying, wow, I noticed you got here 5 minutes later today than you normally do, they could go into their workspace or their volunteer space and say, she hates me.
Right.
I don't know why she said that to me. And you didn't say that at all. But they're just not able to process emotionally. So even the people that are slumping in the chair and going, oh, thank goodness, they might be the source of trauma. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, well, you can tell that that's true. The people that have the biggest reaction are people that I would say probably carry the most drama with them. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They just don't like dealing with it from other people, but they just don't have those coping skills. And so a workplace free of that is a relief to them, but they're often the ones that come in and create
right.
drama themselves.
Right. Bring it. That's absolutely right.
So watch for those slumpers.
Yeah. How do you, when you're looking to, I just mentioned, you know, interviewing a Jen Meyer, and you want them on your team, what are some of the key things that you can dangle out there and say, you know, this is what we do here? Like, one of them is to have less drama. Honestly, I am so amazed that no matter if it's a dramatic person or if it's just a really, honestly, a great person that doesn't have a lot of drama in their life, everybody's reacting the same way. They are so over dramatized by their coworkers, wherever they're coming from when they come to us. That's obviously huge, so I'll just give that one out. But from your perspective, Peggy, what are some other things that we see that they're really valuing? And it's maybe even worth making a change over to your company if you can give me this.
And what was that? I didn't understand that last part of your question. I'm
well,
sorry.
If you've got a prospective employee in front of you,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to communicate to them what you offer as an employer to Generation Me, what is going to really turn their crank? What is it that I could say? Now, like earlier we were talking about, you know, we try to encourage people, want to give you rewards or mentions if you, you know, make certain goals or certain things like that. What are some of the other things that they're really looking for in a new job? Less
believe
drama, maybe public recognition. What are some other things?
Believe it or not, training. And people are shocked when I say that because they're like, well, they don't like to be told what to do. They don't like negative feedback. They really, really don't like negative feedback. And if they don't know what's expected of them, that frustration level will come to a real high roar really quickly if they haven't been really introduced into the environment. So that is one key thing a lot of them are looking for. Here's what we do for our new employees. This is our process. We want to make sure that you understand the expectations and have a chance to ask questions. And so we really focus on that. Here's the program that we do. We set you up with a mentor so that as you're transitioning from just beginning through the stages, that you have that opportunity to grow and ask questions and learn more. And they really, really hunger for that. That is one of the biggest on exit interview surveys with HR professionals. That is one of the hugest things that caused an employee to leave, is that they didn't know what to do. One of the things that can really help too is establishing a code of champions and just let them know that you've done that and what that means for your employees. And that can look different for every business, but one component that I strongly suggest with the companies that I work with is that they include a conflict resolution process in that code of champions. And what that does, that helps those high drama situations, because if you have a conflict resolution process where the person making the complaint has to be involved in the process, they're going to be a lot more judicious about throwing other people under the bus or taking credit for somebody else's work, which are two of the traits of Gen Me, unfortunately, and where some of the drama is created. But if they know they've got to sit in front of their accuser, well, usually what I suggest is this process starts between the two of them, and if they can't work it out, the two of them with the manager, and then it can escalate from there. But just help them to understand that we not only say it's important, we have a process set up so that we can support you and so that you can understand how important it is. And that really gets the message across. It's more, now you're not just saying it. You said, this is important enough to us that we've made a process in our organization to make sure that we do resolve conflict, and we do it respectfully, and we don't do drama. That'll set a different tone to their ear than just, we don't do drama here.
Interesting, very interesting. Now, you've mentioned a couple times a code of champions. Where does that come from?
You know, I use it a lot with my parents, and it just floats so nicely into my work with managers and volunteer groups and executives. But it came from this notion, and I hear it all the time. You mentioned the ages of my kids. My youngest is 4, so his brand of acting up is not the same as the older ones. But my now 29 and 27-year-old would often say, well, who says so? Well, if it doesn't hurt anybody, then it doesn't matter. And they grew up in this environment, in this age, and this with media support for this idea that anything goes as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. And businesses can't operate that way, and families can't operate that way.
Right.
So my house, we had, you can't lie, you can't drink or do drugs. I mean, we had it was a short list. It was a list of 6 things that we came up as our code of champions. And then we held everybody accountable to that code. And it's important that it's a short list, because it's a long list, so you can't remember it all, and then you'll always be caught doing something wrong, right?
Right,
and
right.
And it's also got to be very definable. So one thing that I would always see on a parent's list is, you must have respect. Well, think about that. If you ask your teenager to sweep the floor, they're going to be rolling their eyes. Chances are, at some point in their life. Is that respectful? No. But if they keep their mouth shut, roll their eyes all they want, and get the floor swept, then, you know, that's something that you don't want to have to intervene on. The goal is to not have to discipline your children. If you're doing your job right, you're very rarely going to have to discipline them. So translate that into with volunteer organizations and the workforce, right? The dream is the people that work for you are going to feel so valued and so empowered and have this code of champions that everybody lives by. So it might be the customer deserves, you know, somehow a customer loyalty statement, a conflict resolution statement. Have those in your code of champions. They're going to self-regulate. You're not going to have to be involved to the extent that you may have once been, because they're all going to be on board, and they're going to see the value in it too. and then they're going to be more self-regulating, and you can step out of that supervisory role and back into the manager role.
That is awesome. Well, this is Marnie. We're visiting today with Peggy Harper Lee of PeggyHarperLee.com. We're going to come back and talk about how to say what you want to say and how to get yourself completely out of the bad guy role and get your team to do what you need them to do. We'll be right back.
Do you ever need speakers for dinners, retreats, conferences, or other women's events? Check out www.womenspeakers.com. It's the largest online directory of Christian women speakers in the world, featuring over 1,500 Christian women speakers, some near you, and some from every level of experience and fee range you can imagine. So you're sure to find lots of great speaker options for you and your next event over at www.womenspeakers.com. That's Women Speakers.
Well, you guys, I am having such a good time this afternoon learning about Generation Xers and Yers. They call them Generation Me. And our guest today, Peggy Harper Lee, is helping us to understand how we can really maximize our relationships with these younger people who we love, and we want them to succeed, and we want to work with them, and we want to enjoy our time with them. And they're so much fun, and they're so talented. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if, Peggy, I don't know if you have seen this too, but this younger generation, their minds are actually developed quite differently than ours, and they can learn things in a different way than I could. I'm not the best example, but, I mean, they really... Some of them are just absolutely brilliant. They're young, and they're so bright, and they're really a lot of fun.
Oh, I would agree with that. I mean, part of that no rule, no boundaries is they don't see some of the limitations that
right.
sometimes we impose on. They don't self-edit like some of us older people do, and so they really are able to turn something upside down and say, well, what would happen if I do this? And you're right, the creativity, if set in the right environment, can be outstanding. So that's definitely the positive. So that's the payoff for
right.
putting what we've been talking about, absolutely.
You know, when you were talking about getting yourself kind of out of the bad guy role and into the good guy role, one of the things that I did when I was parenting, I always encourage moms to do this with their kids still, is to, as often as possible, get yourself out of the bad guy role. So, for example, we would put a chore chart up in the kitchen, and it would say what each child had to do on which days, and then they would do it, and they would check it off. Well, what would happen is then they would say to me something like, well, I don't want to do the folding today. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, but that's just what the chart says is your job. Well, right away, you know, I mean, I could have said, well, you have to because I say so. But right away, just by transferring the weight of the offense to the chart instead of to myself, I gain a little ability to come alongside them and feel sad with them. Oh, sadness, you have to do folding today. Yeah, that's what the chart says. Oh, well,
yeah.
You know, another day you'll get to, you know, wipe the dishes or something. So I think that I've definitely carried this into my managing in the work environment too. We definitely have systems in place that are communication tools that take all of us out of the bad guy role, and we just communicate back and forth. You know, if it's in the restaurant, we might say, you know, I opened up the fridge today and there's pizza sauce all over. You know, just we got to remember to wipe it down. We're not naming names. We aren't doing anything. This is just everybody. Come on. You wouldn't like to open the fridge and find pizza sauce all over. You know, I mean, it's just allowing us to communicate in ways that it's not judgmental. It's not criticizing anybody in particular. But the person who did the pizza sauce knows, oh, yep, that was me. So what are some other ways that we can step out of the bad guy role and allow life to do it a little bit more?
Yeah, and I love how you say that coming alongside, because that's an excellent analogy, and that's why I love the Code of Champions, because that's exactly what that is. That's saying, here's what we've all agreed to, and then we just hold all each other accountable. We don't need to blame people and point people out. Just as you said, the person who spilled the piece of sauce knows who did it, and they'll likely step up. So I think that's excellent. Part of communication is that, I think I mentioned this before, is that they really, it's hard for them to take negative feedback, and you're going to need to you know, they're not going to be stellar 100% of the time. None of us are. We all make mistakes. And so communicating with that authority, but not being afraid to come from that position of, you need to, I am in charge, and I am the leader here, and my role as leader is to help you, and I'm not helping you if I overlook these issues or if I overlook these
right.
problems. It won't serve our business, and it won't serve you. So, you know, your words were come alongside of them. That's how I view that sort of communication as well. It's not that you can't correct them. It's just the manner in which you do it so that you build respect through the process instead of destroy it through the process. So, again, just giving them frequent feedback, do it in a way that it builds respect. And, you know, sometimes you're going to have to sandwich it. I have four kids. Two I have to sandwich bad news, and two I don't. One, my oldest, my daughter, I can literally hit her upside the head, and she'll be okay and go off. not literally. I'm not smacking her. But, you know, it's just, hey, you messed up. Don't do that again. And she'll be like, okay, she'll go off. I have two that would just destroy, leave on the floor. And employees are the same way. So just have compassion that we all receive information differently and work to understand how they receive it. But don't be afraid to come from that, look, I'm not doing my job and I'm not doing you any good if I'm not a leader here. That's my role. I take it seriously. And I'm actually letting you down if I don't do this. They respect that. Yeah.
Right. Right, that's awesome. I want us to talk about, and you guys, if you haven't already done so, you want to download the report that Peggy put together for you over at marniesfriends.com, or if you're in the membership zone, it's right there with this training. But step number three, I want to talk about how we're saying it, what we're saying and how we're saying it in just a second. But one of the things that we've done, this, they hate negative feedback. The training curve in some businesses is much steeper than others. And in one of our businesses, we have a very steep training curve. It's a lot to learn. It's learned under pressure in front of customers, and it's a tough learning curve. And we say it takes about 100 hours before someone feels really good. They're like, yeah, I know what's going to hit me. I know how to handle it. I can do this. And so we're looking for people that find that to be a challenge, that say, like I was just mentioning earlier today, we just hired a young guy, and I said, why did you want to work here? And he said, I'm ready to learn something new. And I'm like, well, do we have something new for you? but what we instituted at that particular business is, and it's not that big of a deal, but we instituted a $100 bonus that if they make it to the 100-hour point, they've survived 100 hours of training. And we know that by that time, they're going to feel so confident and so excited about what they're doing. But if they make it to that point, we give them $100. And we don't usually frame it in if you make it to that point. We just say when. When you hit your 100 hours, we're going to give you a $100 bonus. And it's really been a wonderful thing. I just had a newer gal say to me today, I must be getting pretty close to my 100, aren't I? And I'm like, you are. You are rocking. You are rocking this place. You are doing it all. And pretty soon, I think you're just within probably one pay period or maybe another. You're going to be right there, you know. These are all part-time people, so it takes a little while to get to the 100 hours. And what it does is it gives us a positive way. And so when I bring somebody in, I'm telling them, you know, during that first 100 hours, I mean, I'm going to ask you, you got to let people step into you and correct you every single time they see you. They don't know if you already know it, so they're going to help you by telling you how it goes. And maybe you've heard it four times already. Just smile and think $100 and just receive it. But the reality is sometimes somebody's going to tell you something you haven't heard yet, and down the road a little ways, you're going to be really grateful they bothered to tell you. So a lot of it is framing it. So let's talk about how we say it. And your first one is to provide frequent and specific feedback. So
right.
Give us an example of how that looks.
Well, you know, don't sandbag. I mean, we do that in our relationships sometimes, and we do it at work sometimes. We just get caught up, and then at the end of the week we say, and you didn't, and you didn't, and you didn't, and you didn't, and you didn't. That's not going to be constructive with them. So be working with them, and this has got to be organic again. I mean, you don't have to jump up and run out there every time, but really be clear with them on what they're doing and what you need them to do, and have them have an expectation of that. So it's going to be different for every working environment. It's going to be different if they're in the training phase versus the mastery phase, and you know, you'll have to take a look at all of that. But you know, how many times have you worked for a company? I know this has happened to me more often than not, where my annual review period flies by. 4 months later, somebody casually goes by, walks by, and says, oh, yeah, you're supposed to fill it out for yourself. Here, do it. And I don't even see my boss in the process. And I'm writing my own review. That's not working anymore. Annual reviews are not frequent enough. So build in a process that's less labor-intensive. You don't need to sit down and write an hour-long report and come up with every positive and negative thing. But have some checkpoints along the way that you can institute as a process with all your employees where you're saying, hey, let's check in on this skill and this thing that you're learning and this goal that we have and where are we and did you have any questions, and just be more interactive along the way so that they, again, are clear about what's expected. They have that endpoint and they have that opportunity to view you as a trusted source and that you'll do what you say, whether you like what they're doing or not. And that'll build the respect. So the communication is going to be different, but it needs to be consistent and it needs to be easy to implement. You don't want to create a system to where you've now got 10 more hours to pack into every week. That's obviously not going to work. And be honest. They do respect honesty, even if it's bad news. You know, they have overly high views of themselves, and they have overly high expectations, right? And so if they're coming in the door and you said, well, you know, we've had people that have come in and been promoted to sales manager within 2 months, you can do it too. 2 months goes by and that's in their head, and that's going to cause a problem in a very short period of time. So be careful with, be honest with them, but be careful with feeding into their overly high expectations and their overly high opinion of themselves.
That's such good advice. And even when you are careful, don't worry, they will still do it. I recently had somebody tell me, an adult, and maybe like gals that have worked, you know, we have people who have worked for us for, you know, a dozen years, and we have people who have worked for us for 2 years or whatever. And so usually the 2 years are younger people, and one of the younger people had said, do you think she'll take me to the same pay level as you now that I've been here for 2 years? And, you know, you just can't. As a boss, you just can't. You do that. You have to set some realistic boundaries. You know, you've got a 17-year-old and you've got a 45-year-old. The 45-year-old has a mortgage and a car payment and, right, you know, children. And the 17-year-old has nothing except their cell phone, you know, and really, you just can't do it. But they really think you should because they've really been faithful for 2 years. And so it does take just a lot of grace and just gentle training. One of the things that I love about everything you've said to us today is that setting expectations is just huge. It always has been, and maybe now it is more than ever. Between the code of conduct and the training that you're talking about, when we set an expectation and then we live up to that expectation, we really become the rock for them. Not only the rock that's hard to push up against, but also the rock that's there for them when they're struggling. Talk to us about what to do with a Gen X or Y-er who's fallen apart.
Yeah, and that's going to happen. Like we just talked about, they do tend to have high expectations and over-inflated views of what they're capable of. They do take credit for work that they didn't do. They've been used to that their entire lives if they've been helicopter parented or overindulged. And it really goes back, and I'll expand on this a little bit, but it really goes back to that issue of where they are really in their heads, where they're over-dramatizing, overblowing, and supposing a lot of what's happening. And if you can help them to talk it out instead of think it out, that will solve, in my experience, 50 to 60% of the problems. Because a lot of what's going on for them is in their heads. Nobody else knows. You can't help them because you wouldn't have even thought in a million years that they're worried about what they're worried about.
Yeah.
So getting it out in the open, shining the light on it, taking a look at it, huh, is this true? The other part is that things have come easy for them, and so their frustration tolerance is fairly low. I know 6 and 7 year olds who can't tie their shoes because their parents say it frustrates them, so they buy Velcro or they tie their shoes for them. I was volunteering in a first grade class, and I was tying shoes, and I was talking to the teacher going, wow, you know, my kids were done with this in kindergarten. She said, yeah, it's one of our new job responsibilities. So their frustration tolerance is fairly low. And a lot of that's because they have these high expectations, and the first sign of something going wrong, they fall apart. So the languaging around that will come back from them, I can't. And one of my most important tools at that point is, what can you do?
Good.
I can't do this job. Well, is there a part of it that you can do? Well, yeah, I've done this part before, and I can do that okay. Great, let's start there. And working them through it, because focusing on it, the frustration is I can't, I won't, it can't work out, all that. Turn the languaging around. Our brains don't have a picture for don't, won't, can't, but our emotions do. That's where our emotions are centered. So that's why getting that language in helps, because it takes it out of that emotional can't, won't, into the realm where we can be more thoughtful about it, more rational about it, and they're not used to that. So.
I love that. That's awesome. That's awesome. And very quickly, what do you do with the Jen Meyer that's falling apart but doesn't want to talk about it? I can't talk about it.
I can't. You know, sometimes it's as gentle. You know, I remember my daughter when she was 12 and a half to 14, and some days I felt she was lucky to be alive. And because she just had these dramatic emotions, and sometimes it was just the kiss on the head, you're going to be okay, I'm here for you, let me know when you want to talk. That would just totally turn the situation around. And I've found that true with a lot of Gen X and Gen Yers as well. You're not going to strong-arm them into it. They are pretty self-confident. And so if they just want to shut up and bottle up, then you may not, you're not going to be able to strong-arm them. But remind them your role. I'm a leader. I'm here to help you. I want to help you. And to do that, I need to understand what's going on with you. And if you need to gather your thoughts, that's okay, because I know you will. I know you're smart. Make some statements that have to go toward your confidence in them. And again, not overblown. Don't tell them they'll be able to figure it all out by themselves, because chances they probably can't, and they'll just think that you're blowing smoke, and they'll probably be right. But let them know you're there for them, that you have confidence in their ability to work through it, if not to do it. So those are two very different things, and that you're there for them, and that's often really effective. Certainly, the message probably in the Code of Champions is that needs to not spread to the rest of the workforce. So, you know, just be consistent with that type of thing. Fine if you don't want to talk, but I need you to not impact customer service or impact,
right.
You know, be clear about the expectations of, I'm not going to push you, but you're not going to, it's not okay for you to blow this up and make it everybody else's problem as well.
Awesome. Peggy, this hour has flown by, and you have given us so much good information. You guys can learn more about Peggy at her website, peggyharperlee.com. Peggy, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, it's been a privilege, and I really have enjoyed talking to you about this topic. I like I said, usually when I'm talking to people, there's a lot of head nodding going on. I love to hear your stories. You can connect with me on my website. That's my Twitter handle as well. I'm pretty easy to find. And that free report is available on Marnie's website. You can also sign up on my website to get more information if you want, or send me questions. So it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much. Well, you have a great day. And you guys, you need to go over and check out Peggy HarperLee.com. Peggy is the author of Spoiled, Fresh Ideas for Parenting Your Entitled Child at Any Age, and she has a new book coming out for business owners and people in management position who work with Gen Xers and Gen Yers. I'm so glad that you were here with us today. I hope you learned a lot. Be sure to get the download and follow up with Peggy anytime. She's there for you. She's a speaker, a consultant, and she would love to support you in what you're trying to do. Have a great day. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye now.